in a wheelchair in the last days of his life. One day I was down at Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the whole bunch of us got together in the Ramada Inn and had a meal together at lunch. And Dr. Rice was sitting beside me on my left in a wheelchair, and then Mrs. Rice was next to him. Dr. Rice was between Mrs. Rice and me. And so I was feeling very much sympathy for the Rices, Dr. Rice, because he could no longer preach. It was obvious that his preaching days were gone. And after we'd eaten a bite, Dr. Rice pushed his wheelchair back and started going around the table, shaking hands to everybody. And I had a chance to lean across where he was and talk to Mrs. Rice. And I said, "Mrs. Rice, how are you doing?" And a great big old smile came across her face, as pretty as I ever saw her. And she said, "Dr. Heil, I haven't had so much fun in my life." Well, that shocked the fire out of me. Here's her husband in a wheelchair. And she said, "Dr. Hiles," she said, "you've had him all these years." And she said, "now I've got him." And she said, "I get to do now what I wanted to do to John R. all of our married life. I get to wait on him and spoil him and be with him and love him." I never saw Mrs. Rice look so pretty. Did you know that billions of dollars a year are spent trying to make us look pretty? I hope some of you fellows on the platform will spend some, a little bit. But honestly, think about it now. Think of it. Think of all of the cosmetic departments in all the department stores and drug stores. I mean, if it's not Helen Curtis going, it's Avon calling. Everything is made up for the betterment of our appearances. The cosmetics. The Victanis. I mean, think of all of the work that ladies do. Think of it. Just to have a smaller tummy. And think of all the diets. I'm going on one tomorrow. But think of all the diets. Why? Just so we'll look pretty. Think of the faceliftings, the wigs, and toupees, and the designers, and the beauty salons, and the jewelry stores, and the barber shop, and the clothing stores. Why, it just seems like that the whole country has dedicated itself into trying to make us become attractive. Now, this morning, if you listen carefully, I am going to show you a sure way that you can be attractive. Are you listening? Oh, you say, I know. It's inner beauty. Nope, not talking. I'm talking about outer beauty. I'm talking about your push looking better. I'm going to show you this morning what the Bible says about you becoming the nicest looking you can become. Now, it's folly for you to do cartwheels and getting to beauty shops and getting your hair done. Looks like mine is about done. But it's folly for you to spend your life, getting that one dress that makes you look just right, and the cosmetics, and the hairstyle, and the exercises, and all the rest, when there is, and I mean what I'm saying. I'm not trying to be spiritual now. I'm talking about plain old good looks. There is a way, not just for women, but also for men. Now, I want you to look, please, at 1 Peter chapter 3. Now look at it, and you're about to see something you never saw in your life before. Look at it now. In 1 Peter chapter 3, I want you to follow me. Look at it carefully. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands. Now follow me. Look at me now. That's talking about a wife and a husband, right? Be in subjection to your own husband. Okay, now to verse 2. While they, your husbands, behold your chaste conversation or behavior coupled with fear. Now, verse 1 is talking about a husband, right? A man, right? Verse 2 says they, that's talking about your man, all right? Now, look down to verse number 5. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also, who trust in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands. Now, you got husband in verse 1. You got man in verse 2. You got husband in verse 5. Now look at verse 6. Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement. Now look at me now. These first 6 verses, 1 Peter 7, 3, are talking about husbands or wives and what? Wives and husbands. All right? So the entire subject deals with the woman submitting herself to her man, and yielding herself to her man, and obeying her man. It says Sarah obeyed Abraham. Now look in verse 3. Whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning, the plaiting of the hair, wearing of gold, or the putting on apparel, but let it be the hidden what? Man of the heart. Now, all my life, I've heard Bible teachers say, that means that there is the hidden person. It doesn't say hidden woman here. It says hidden man. What man is it talking about? For Sarah, it's talking about Abraham. Abraham was that hidden man in Sarah's life. And what God is saying here is this. The whole thing. Look, it doesn't say hidden woman or hidden person or hidden nature. It says hidden man. It said to Sarah, you have a hidden man. Now, if you want to be beautiful, that hidden man will have to shine through you, and that's the way you're attractive. The hidden man of the heart. Now, it's not talking about the new nature. Not talking about the subjected spirit. It's talking about there is a man. It's talking about wives in subjection to your husbands. And it's talking about subjection to a man. And so what God is saying is this. He's saying, if you want to be beautiful, he's saying, you have the hidden man. You are. Listen, hey, wake up. Good night. That's what happened this morning Now, Pete talked this morning while Jesus was praying, apostles were sleeping, and something went on they never heard of before. Now, if you can't wake up, slap yourself in the face. If that won't work, slap the fellow next to you in the face and wake him up. Good night. Listen to me. Hear me now. I've got something I want you to hear. Now, shut up and hear me. Listen to me. God is talking here about a woman and how she can be beautiful. He's saying, he's not just by putting on a silver of gold or of jewelry. It is not putting on makeup on the face. It is not just putting on beautiful apparel. God is saying, if you want beautiful, it says there is a hidden man. I bet some of you gals wish that hidden man come out and enjoy himself, but there is a hidden man. And God is saying, if you want to be attractive, he's saying, you live for that hidden man of your heart. There is a beauty about a woman. When she fills that God-given place of serving that man of her heart that nothing else can give. When our kids, our girls were little, I used to tell bedtime stories. And I would say, one time, there was a little girl, and Becky would say, yeah. And I said, and her name was? And Becky would say, Becky. And I would say, and that girl grew up, and I said, somewhere in the world, there is a man for that little girl. And they go, and I don't know where he is, but there is a man for that little girl. And that little girl's going to grow up and bigger and bigger until one day she's going to find that man. And all the time I was talking about that, there was that man hidden in her heart. God's vacuum, God's void that God put there that could only be filled with that one man in all the world made for her. Out yonder somewhere he lived. Out yonder somewhere he was growing up. But right now he's the hidden man in her heart. And as I would teach her and train her, she was preparing to find that hidden man, that one man in all the world, whom when she finds, she can become more beautiful because she becomes in subjection and she yields and she serves and she lives for that one man. I can recall David and Becky and I would play wedding, marriage. And David always performed the ceremony and I always got married to Becky. And so David would say, we're here in the presence of our God and these assemble witnessers. And he would say, any man can tell us why they shouldn't get married, would you speak now or forever hold your peace? And Becky'd stand there, I'd stand there, she'd have my arm, which side are they on? And she'd have my arm, and Dave would say, do you take this woman to be your awful wedded wife? And I do. And he'd say, repeat after me, and he'd make up his own, you know, ceremony. And Becky and I have been married time and time and time again. Now, why were we playing a wedding and marriage ceremony? Why? Because there was a hidden man in Becky's heart. A hidden man. And that man was in there. You see, God put a void in her heart, and that void was shaped like a man. And God, somewhere in this world, had the one fella who could fit that void. And what was I doing? I was trying to practice, let Becky practice becoming the kind of a woman wife she ought to be for that hidden man in her heart. And we had dates, and I'd let the girls spoil me. They'd bring my house shoes to me. Why? Because they're practicing getting the house shoes to the hidden man of the heart.
And you say, I'm not going to bring his old house shoe. Let him get his own.
Freeze that way. Look how ugly you are.
If you think I want to serve you, you got nothing coming. That's why you're so ugly, Jezebel.
What was I doing? Becky was practicing for that hidden man in her heart. There was one guy. I hear sometimes folks say, well, there are 10 guys for every gal. Any one of those 10 is okay with God. You need to check your Bible a little bit more carefully. You need to know God a little more carefully. There was being made. Listen, I recall when Linda was just a baby in the crib. I went down to San Antonio, Texas to preach for a fellow named Buddy Murphy, pastored the Blanco Road Baptist Church in San Antonio, Texas. And so while I was there, I had a little boy in the crib. His name was Johnny Murphy, a little baby. And I did this little piggy, went to market. This little piggy stayed home. Those piggies now have grown up to full-grown hogs, I guarantee you for sure. But this little piggy stayed home. And I did not know that night when I was playing with that little boy that I was playing with the hidden man of my daughter's heart, whom I had left a while ago to fly to San Antonio and preach. I did not know it. I'd known what I know now, and I drowned him then while he was little. But I did not know it. But I'm saying, there in that crib was the only man in this world that could fit the void left in the heart of Becky. And there was the only man in this world who could so fit that place so she could serve him, so she could be the most beautiful Linda she could be in all the world. Buy you Helen Curtis and buy you Avon and buy you wardrobe, but there is nothing in this world that'll make you as attractive as when you serve that hidden man of the heart. Hidden man of the heart. I used to sit at night with the girls. I did at the kitchen table night after night. Night after night. And I'd teach them about marriage. I'd teach them what they ought to be as a wife. And I'd talk to them. And what I was doing was this. I was trying to train them for the hidden man of the heart. Linda one day broke up with a boyfriend. I liked the guy. I didn't know why she broke up with him. 3 months passed, and I said, Cindy, why did Linda break up with him? And she said, Dad, don't you know why? And I said, why? She said, because she thought you didn't want her to go with him. I mean, I liked the guy. But Linda was watching me carefully, wanting to please me, trying to be careful that she did what she thought I wanted to do. Now, what was she doing? She was preparing herself to someday watch that man of God's choosing in her life so she could watch for the needs of the hidden man in her heart. Now, they have found those men who have, for all their lives, been in their hearts. And the best beauty, the best way in the world for Cindy Scott, for Linda Murphy, or Becky Smith to be beautiful is when they show that hidden man. Did you know that teaches that the only way that a woman can be pretty is have her man show through? That means the inner beauty is us. And so, no amount of jewelry can hide the hardness of an ERA face. No lovely garments can compensate for rebellious countenance. No attractive hairstyle can compete with the beauty of a meek and quiet and feminine disposition. One of the most beautiful women I know is in her 80s. And she walks just a little step at a time and barely toddles. Why? Because even though he's in heaven, John R. Rice is shining through Lois. She still lives for the hidden man in her heart. And though he's in heaven, John R. Rice has been in Lois McClure Rice's heart ever since she breathed her first breath. But now, wait a minute. Shall we limit this just to the ladies? You men are enjoying this very much. Shall we limit this to just the ladies? No. God has a purpose for each of us. And that purpose is in our heart. It could say, it may be the hidden pulpit of the heart. What am I to adorn myself with? This ring, this suit, these shoes, this tie? No, sir. There's only one thing in the world that can adorn me and make me my best looking, and that is the hidden pulpit in my heart. For that's the thing that God made me for. Just as much as God made Cindy Hiles for the hidden man of her heart, God made me for the hidden pulpit of my heart. And I'll tell you something, too. You're looking at me this morning. Look at me. You're looking at me at my love list. Yeah. You'd hate to see me when I'm ugly, would you? But I mean, look, I don't care. Say what you want to say. I'm better looking right now than I ever am any other time. Why? Because there was, from the time that I was born, a hidden pulpit in my heart. See that man up there in the corner? The guy, the dumb-looking guy, Merle Phillips. Merle? Is that your first name? See him? Stand up. Now that man, you'll have to agree, is not much to look at. Thank you. But I can tell you when he was. That man right there is the best postman that ever delivered a letter. He is the original friendly postman. Every house he went to, he went in and had coffee and donuts with the lady there. Boy, I love this truth. I may preach till 3 o'clock this afternoon. Listen. I'm not kidding you. I never saw a man who was any happier
When that fella right there had that mail pouch on his back, you've seen him. Had a mail patch on his pack, had a mail sack on his back. Walking down the street or driving one of those little machines. There was a glow about it. Why? It was the mail bag in his heart. You have never seen, you folks that never have been to Hiles Anderson College, you've never seen the real Wendell Evans. I mean, you haven't. When that man right there walks the pulpit in the auditorium at Hiles Anderson College, there is a glow about him. I mean it. I mean, you don't know it. But you see him there. He walks up on that platform and he announced the song. And all of a sudden, it's like the king being on his throne. Why? It's like Bob Feller or Sandy Koufax on the mound. It's like Roger Staubach behind the center to get the ball and throw a pass. Why? Because when that man was born, that pulpit at Hiles Anderson College was born in his heart. And he is his brightest and his most radiant. When he walks in that auditorium and stands behind that platform. I had heard of John Rice. I'd never met him. One day I met him at a pastor's conference in Gaston Avenue Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas. Why, I couldn't believe what I saw. I had read his books. Read his magazine paper. Why, I thought that man must eat little children for breakfast. And one day in a pastor's conference back when I was still Southern Baptist, a fellow said, John R. Rice is here. But boy, that was like saying the Antichrist has come to the Southwide Baptist Fellowship. And those pastors, none of whom cared much for Dr. Rice in those days in the Southern Baptist Convention, they said, John Rice, John Rice. But boy, I had read his paper, read his books. I wanted to see him. Hey, I said, which one is it? Point over here. This little guy standing over here. And then one day, I went to hear him preach. And bless God, he was 6'8" tall. And bless God, he did wear a 52-inch coat. Why? Because he was in that place that had been in his heart all those years. New York State. Years ago, a war veteran who had lost his memory in the war walked out on a convention platform unannounced and uninvited. Where the American Legion was having a convention in New York State. And those thousands of folks were astonished when this uninvited guest walked out and stood behind the podium. And this man looked out with tears streaming down his cheeks and he says, fellow veterans, he said, can anyone please tell me who I am? Can anyone please tell me who I am? And there are hundreds of folks in this room this morning asking that same question. Can anyone please tell me who I am? I'll tell you who you are. You are a creature made by your God. And you were made for a purpose in your life. And that purpose is what makes you, when you're doing it and fulfilling it, your loveliest. Brother Al, you look better. I saw you this week. You didn't know I saw you. You had on work clothes as a builder, contractor. You look nice this morning. But there's something about you on the job that glows. Dr. Gergos,
when you pick up that scalpel and saw somebody's breast open and reach in there and perform open heart surgery, you look your best. And God said, ladies, you want to be attractive? Beautiful? There is a man in your heart. A hidden man. This is not talking about the spiritual side of a woman. No, sir. The whole theme is about Sarah, Abraham, husband, wife, man, woman. Some of you college wives spend an hour or two getting ready to come to church. And all the way at church, you gripe at your husband because you haven't seen him much in the last week. It'd be better if you took off your makeup and wore an old house dress and messed your hair up and serve the man in your heart. That's why she looks so pretty. As Dr. Rice was rolled in the wheelchair, person to person. And I said, Mrs. Rice, I've been praying for you. What I really was saying, I've been having pity on you. How are you holding up, I asked. She said, I've never had so much fun in my life. Why? Because she was revealing the hidden man of the heart. People oftentimes say, why do you preach so long? Because I love it so much. Yeah. Well, you say, why? Because I am revealing the hidden pulpit of my heart, the purpose of my existence. Our old-timers have heard this story. Joe Boyd had a father preacher, sort of a old-fashioned hell-raising kind. We called him Father Boyd. Not preacher father, but we called her Mother Boyd and him Father Boyd. And old Father Boyd, after he retired, wore out, health wore out, he got senile. He used to come to church, and I never forget it, for the size where my pastor would teach something, and old Father Boyd would stand up, the old worn out preacher, and he'd say, hey, I didn't know you knew that. He'd say it out loud. Our pastor would say something pretty deep in the Bible, and Brother Boyd couldn't feature anybody else knew that but him. I didn't know you knew. Like, for example, somebody else had called the hidden man of the heart a guy instead of the other nature. And I jumped out. I didn't know you knew that. I told these fellows this morning. I said, you're going to hear something this morning you never thought of in your life. But the old man had preached in him. He came to the point of death. Joe and Edith. Our good friends. He stayed in their house. They gave him a bedroom right next to theirs so that they could watch over him and check him through the night. One day the doctor said, he's just as low as he can get. He won't last long. And they tiptoed in. The old man was fighting for breath. They prayed with him, went to bed in the other room, went off to sleep. During the middle of the night, they heard the awfulest noise you ever heard in your life. They heard sounds. They heard squeaking, hollering in Father Boyd's room. They thought he was probably fighting for his last breath, about to die. They tiptoed to the door, opened the door, and there stood the old preacher, supposed to be dying, standing up in bed, with his Bible open, preaching to a great crowd of people. What was it? It was the hidden pulpit of the heart. That's what makes you pretty. You're looking at the prettiest Jack Hiles you'll ever see right now. And tomorrow, when this good man right here goes into a hospital room, and brings cheer and comfort like nobody in this world can bring, you'll see the handsomest John Colston you've ever seen. When Dr. Wendell Evans walks up tomorrow, the pulpit, I know what's going to happen now. all the guys going to whistle when you walk up there. I know this crowd. I know this crowd. I know you. I know you. I know you. The girl's going to go, woo-hoo. But tomorrow morning, you'll see the handsomest wind of heaven. For you'll never stand as tall. And you'll never have the glow and the radiance and the countenance in your life like you do at that moment when you are letting that hidden thing of the heart shine through. That's what Peter meant when he said, not with braided hair. There's nothing wrong with braiding your hair. Not with gold jewelry, though there's nothing wrong with gold jewelry. Not with putting on apparel, though I'm dead sure for putting on apparel. But he said it's not that. He said Sarah had an adornment. It was Abraham hidden in her heart. I love that. I love it. I love it. I've been rejoicing in it all week long. There is a purpose for your life. When your mom and dad looked at you and tried to figure out a name for you, and your mother held her to your breast for the first time, there was a place in your heart formed only so that it could be filled by the will of God for your life. And when you find it, and when you do it, you will have found how to become the most attractive you you'll ever be. That's why an 85-year-old woman walking about like this can be beautiful. Though her husband's in heaven publishing the heaven's sword of the Lord and articles against Peter because of the fact he denied the Lord years ago, he's still digging up that stuff. Down here on earth, he still lives in the heart of Mrs. John Rice. He's the hidden man of her heart. What did God make you to do? The first thing he made you do was receive Christ. And after you receive Christ, there is a purpose for your life. And when you find and fulfill that purpose, Brother Al, I believe there's a hammer in your heart when you're born. I think I heard it knocking in there. Brother Dillard, there's a big old hammer and saw in your heart when you're born. Brother Colston, there was a hospital bed in your heart and a school desk in your heart and a sailor's uniform in your heart and a preacher boy in yours and a pulpit in mine. Our Heavenly Father,